Hello, and welcome to the next in our series of podcasts in which we're looking at the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the volunteering community sector in North East Essex. We'll be unpacking the findings from the project North East Essex Communities Responding to Crisis. This podcast and its contents are co-funded by Community 360, the North East Essex Health and Wellbeing Alliance, and the ESRC Impact Acceleration Account at the University of Essex. I'm Sam Woodward, a postgraduate researcher at the University of Essex in the Department of History and a researcher and interviewer on this project. I will be narrating this second episode in our podcast series, which focuses on the impact of the pandemic on people. The COVID-19 pandemic left no one untouched. Across the community and voluntary sector, we're beginning to see the consequences not only of the pandemic as we work towards recovery, but also the areas that were lacking crucial funding and provision from years of cuts and austerity. This quote from Alistair McGarry at the Youth Inquiry Service demonstrates some of the issues that are currently being faced by organisations. This example explores the situation for young people specifically, but we heard similar sentiments regarding provision across the sector.
The reality is that there is no coherent provision. There is a tapestry, well, I would say a bit more of a spider's web, because there's lots of gaps in it, of provision that... You know, if you're a young person with challenges, you'll get good support for schools because schools generally are good. But beyond that and beyond what they can provide, it's a lottery, really. It depends what mix of services are available in your local area, isn't it? And the accessing of services such as mental health services for young people is so overwhelmed. It doesn't matter how you repolish it. There is too much demand. And of course, the reality of this and our fear is we are, thank God, in a horrible way, it's taken a COVID for people to recognise that mental health is something more than a bit of an illness. You know, unfortunately, I think there is an iceberg of need under there that is going to out over the next, year or so.
The new normal following the pandemic has become a popular topic and source for speculation. But what is that going to look like for each of us? Where are the gaps? Who is being hit hardest? And how can we use our experiences from the pandemic to build back fairer? This episode focuses on the impact of the pandemic on service users, volunteers and staff. Their experiences as told by community organisers. Like the first episode, we'll be looking at clips of interviews to explore and understand how the pandemic was experienced by individuals over the last 2 years. As we heard in the first episode, the pandemic caused organisations and individuals to rapidly adapt, as described by Tracy Rudling, CEO of Community 360.
We didn't even understand to what extent this pandemic was going to exacerbate to or how long it was going to be. So we just started to do what we thought was going to be helpful in our local community and what a local hub offer might look like. So for me, it was that first week of March when we started to think, okay, let's start mobilising voluntary community sector, public services and create a collaborative. Let's work together on this. So that was the start for me, really.
Most of the organisations that we spoke to saw an increased and changing demand of their services during the initial 6 months of the pandemic, due to the impact of lockdown and closure of services. Action for Family Carers saw referrals for their befriending calls double from 100 to 200 a month, as people began to feel the impact of lockdown and isolation. A similar picture emerged in Next Chapter with a doubling of referrals for victims of domestic abuse, as described by Lorna Priest, Refuge Services Manager.
I mean, have you seen a kind of rise in the amount of people that need you?
Yes, yeah, so a lot of refugees wasn't taking referrals. I'd say our referrals have probably doubled. We're probably getting on average in about 300 referrals a month for community, IDVA and refuge, which is a lot. And I do think it's down to people being in lockdown together. Working from home can be stressful, especially if you haven't got, if you're both working from home, you haven't got an office or anywhere that you can both work separately, it's difficult.
It wasn't just the number of referrals that were increasing for some organisations, but also the complexity of issues raised by service users, as explored in the first podcast of this series. and the demand for services has not remained static throughout the pandemic either. Organisations have continuously had to adapt, where possible, to meet and in some cases anticipate the needs of their community. Temporary government measures were introduced to support people through schemes like furlough, a rise in universal credit payments and housing schemes. However, these were only temporary. Organisations were concerned about what would happen to people once those temporary measures were removed, as described by Steve Brown from Beacon House.
As you know, at the moment, it's very difficult for landlords to evict people for non-payment of rent. An awful lot of people have taken that opportunity not to pay their rent and therefore have built up significant debt that the landlords have got no chance of ever seeing repaid. So as soon as landlords are able to evict those people, I think there's going to be a tsunami of people on the streets. I don't think there's any doubt about that. There can be a lot of people on the streets. And more concerning, I think there's going to be some people on the streets for the first time who are, if you like, very ill-prepared for where they're going to find themselves.
Other groups became concerned where service user numbers dropped. This was for a variety of reasons, such as lockdown policies or limited access to remote services that were provided through digital platforms. This caused concern for organisations and a need to resource alternate solutions, like Citizens Advice in Colchester, who had to close their physical space and used remote alternatives to provide support.
For us, really, that the worry now is we are not providing an inclusive service still, and there are members of the public who, for whatever reason, are really going to fall through the safety net because they can't access us if they've got no email address. It costs to phone in. So we're very mindful of that.
As face-to-face services began to shut down, social isolation became a key issue for many of the organisations that we spoke to. It wasn't just the voluntary and community sector that was shutting down their face-to-face services, but where the response to the pandemic had to become a priority for healthcare services, treatments and services were postponed, increasing isolation among extremely clinically vulnerable groups that experience the tightest of government restrictions, as explained by John Price, chairman of Breathe Easy, a support group for people with lung conditions.
As far as this pandemic goes, unfortunately, everything's been postponed and cancelled and people feel a bit isolated and being left hung out to dry, really. And I'm sure people with other diseases feel the same. That's not just, I'm sure, diabetic. You've got that feeling that they're only interested in COVID, which I understand, but it's primary care of the extremely vulnerable group, which the government have designated most of my members as. I don't think primary care have kept track of them very well, to be honest. I don't know what they could do, but you feel, I mean, some practices have rang some of their patients up and said, "Are you managing?" But a lot haven't, and it's difficult to see a doctor. I mean, they made a statement at the start of this pandemic that the NHS is there for you, but it is, but people are reluctant because they don't feel it is there for them at the moment for other things.
VCS organisations use befriending calls to help combat isolation, and many saw a large increase in the requests for calls. These organisations provided a much-needed connection to the community for many who felt isolated by the pandemic. However, remote alternatives could not make up for face-to-face interactions in many circumstances. The Haven Project, who used grief recovery groups as part of their support mechanisms for service users, found...
And of course, people are bereaved. We've got one lady who is about to lose her stepmother to cancer. And... So anybody who is in that situation now is going to be deprived of a proper process of grief. They're going to be deprived of seeing the person for the last time. They're going to be deprived probably even of going to a funeral, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to be deprived of what we do best when we are bereaved and grief-stricken, is hugging and cuddling each other. What other medicine would you recommend? I don't recommend anything other than that. There's no substitute.
These issues are ongoing for many. In a follow-up interview in January of 2022, Beacon House spoke of the need for support for individuals.
So the issues we are facing, I can't say they are countrywide, but with the people I talk to, mental health is the biggest, or support for mental health is the biggest issue. And it's even greater, I think, for homeless people.
It wasn't service users alone that felt the impact of the pandemic on their support systems and mental health, but also community organisers, staff and volunteers. Community organisers and members of staff saw the rise in need and complexity and responded to it, adapting their services and continuing to support their communities in whatever way it was safest to do so. In particular, throughout the first lockdown, this had a tremendous impact on the work-life balance of many of the community organisers that we spoke to, who were committed to their communities and felt a responsibility to keep going, as described by Elizabeth Akinyemi of the Divine Assembly Ministries Boaz Project.
Personally, I think I've been running on autopilot. It's just, it feels like we can't stop. It's difficult to not do what we're doing, not because of any personal feeling. It's just knowing that stopping means that some people goes without. And so we can't stop. So it's been a case of running on autopilot and hoping and praying that this horrible COVID goes away.
Community leaders and staff continue to put people first, vitally supported by volunteers where possible. The landscape of volunteering changed, where some volunteers had to shield and others came forward while on furlough. Volunteers responded to specific calls for help in unprecedented circumstances through their local communities and government calls. Typical tasks changed for some as physical centres closed and remote tasks, such as befriending calls, were carried out. Many organisations we spoke to saw a surge of volunteers, as described by Kat Wright, Engagement Officer at Community 360.
We put a shout out for volunteers and we went from around 80 volunteers to 500 volunteers within a matter of weeks.
In addition to an increase in volunteers at some existing organisations, some volunteers came together in response to the needs of the local community, forming their own systems of support as needed, such as the 8 Ash Green Hub, as explained by Josh Greenwald.
It started from there, really. Just a couple of voices round the table saying, oh, well, if you're doing anything, put me down for it. And so that was the springboard that started the what's been nicknamed the Village Hub. And we've been running it ever since. I think we've had somewhere in the region of 60 contacts, and I've used almost all of the volunteers one day or another. We haven't actually heard anything since the end of the first lockdown. It's become kind of self-supporting. So the people who contacted me, I got the volunteers to contact them, and then I'm assuming that they've set up their own miniature self-help group within our hub. And I haven't heard anything now for about, probably 3 months. But I view that as a good thing. It shows that the people who are, you know, sort of most at risk in the village are not, you know, they're not in need, that they are catered for one way or another.
The pandemic caused communities to come together and respond to the crisis alongside organisations. However, many of the longer-term impacts remain to be seen. The adaptations that some organisations have made to support the communities will stay in place, as this quote taken from an interview conducted in September of 2020 with Tracy Redling, CEO of Community 360, shows.
So we've gone through all of these different iterations of lockdown back out there again. I suppose for us, the workforce, it's not really changed because we have still been doing 7 days a week and we're still going to continue to do that. And there's a kind of we can't go back. That is the new format of we'll always be a 7 day a week agency now. So what we're not saying is that all of our staff work 7 days, but the organisation will be a 7 day a week organisation. It will never be a Monday to Friday agency anymore. And so those kinds of changes. There's the digital bit that we talked about as well. We'll never change from being a hybrid agency now, whereas part digital, part face-to-face. Yeah, so I suppose it's still challenging, is what I'm saying. And as we come into the winter, the challenges are changing. They're different, but they're still there. So we've now got a whole host of citizens with mental health issues that are attending A&E with mental health issues. We've got a whole issue of catching up on elective surgery. We've got very poorly people where they were too frightened to go to therapy. We noticed this once we started coming out of lockdown. We had to nurture people and build their confidence up, especially our older membership and citizens, to get them over back over that doorstep and feel really safe to get back on a minibus or get in a social car to go to therapy appointments. So there's this constant change and evolving way of operating that we're finding ourselves in now.
As we've seen with new variants of COVID-19 emerging and safety measures remaining under continuing guidance, the pandemic is not over and the scale of the impact on individuals and organisations remains to be seen and fully appreciated. As we determine what it means to live with COVID, communities continue to face challenges between crisis and recovery. Thank you for listening to the second episode in a series of podcasts about this project. This podcast has taken an in-depth look at the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on people. The next episode will explore the financial landscape of the pandemic and its impact on community organisations. Thank you to all of the participants who have been involved with this project so far for their valuable time and input. Thank you to Community 360, our sound editor, and my colleagues Alex Green, Rebecca Warren, Anna Steinhoff, and Deb Wiltshire in the development of this podcast and report.